Don't be a jerk. All right, so you still there?
Okay, well, let's go. Okay. Hi, welcome to In Plain Sight. Jeremy here in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network, and please go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate button, send the much-needed fundage where you can hear all sorts of free speech like the Patrick and Jeremy Show. This is your Tuesday Night Broadcast. Patrick Slattery, welcome.
Thank you very much. There will be ambient sound because that's just the way Bill Gates, he genocided Skype, and we have to do what we have to do. And the trash collectors have to collect the trash, the drivers have to drive, the dogs have to bark, and honestly, it's just a circus out here.
The American economy in action. And yet, no one can afford to live off of the job that they're doing.
It's
interesting. That's some good stuff for Patrick and Jeremy, too, maybe.
It could be.
We are dealing now with the post-Israel-Iran strikes. Kind of wondering which way it's going to go. You know, because of Trump's sweeping win and all of his executive orders, the rollback of wokeness, and, you know, you have Pete Third Temple Hegseth and his Christian Christian Zionist, like Christian nationalism type, like vibe, you know, Deus vault, God wills it. You've got this, the look of the administration is white male Christian, and so, you know, if we go into full out war or keep this up and all of this aggression in the Middle East is going to be blamed, or it could be blamed on, you know, the white Christian male.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, similar, you know, you think about 20 years ago when we invaded Iraq, you know, George Bush, faith-based initiative, all of that, this, you know, all of the aggression and the anti-war people were looking at white Christian male. But is it so much working out that way? You know, it's almost impossible not to see Israel standing this and to see the United States acting on behalf of Israel. Even as Trump gets up and says, God bless Israel, and doesn't give, I'm not in any of Trump's speeches where he said how this benefited America or what interest was it, you know, of America's, or even did Iran pose a direct threat to America. And he didn't really make a case for that. Very difficult. Very, very, very difficult to blame white Christian male Christian Zionism.
Well, of course, the only people you're really allowed to blame for anything, the only people who do anything bad are white Christian males. Everybody else is a victim. So Trump doesn't make the case for why Iran must not have a bomb. He just says they must not have a bomb. Well, occasionally he'll say that Iran, they chant death to America at every chance they get. Well, do they chant death to America at every chance they get? The whole death to America thing, I don't know. I don't speak Farsi. I don't know how much a part of the language death to something is, right? I do remember, who was it? In the run-up to the Iraq War, was it Colin Powell or somebody? I mean, somebody used some sort of very American expression about, what was it even? Like, you know, kicking their ass or something like that. this might sound very strange in other languages. I mean, sometimes if you try to translate expressions, it sounds very strange in another language. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna stick our foot up their ass. Well, that's a very strange thing to say. So, if all he can say is they use a phrase that we find peculiar, and therefore, therefore we have to bomb them. That's kind of odd. Israel has nuclear weapons. They've had nuclear weapons for probably about 60 years now, and it's very, very likely that John F. Kennedy was assassinated by the Israelis because he was determined not to allow them to get nuclear weapons. Israel considers itself immune from international law. They're not part of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. They have a doctrine that if their regime is threatened, that they will lash out at the rest of the world with these nuclear weapons. And yet somehow we've got to say God bless Israel, and Iran must not have a nuclear weapon. So it's all very bizarre. I kick it back to you, Jeremy.
I think that I heard Dr. Duke say that there was some mistranslation there. It's actually death to the Zionist regime. So they're calling for the death of a government system, a political system.
I think the famous mistranslation. Oh, Jesus Christ. Fucking shit.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Then, you're calling on the name of the Lord. I thought maybe you were getting religious there.
It's always something.
There's a mistranslation. Take it at face value. Let's just say that Sean Hannity's right, and Iran calls for death of America, death of Israel.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to say the famous mistranslation was wipe Israel off the map. That was... President Ahmadinejad supposedly said that at this international conference that David Duke was attending, and actually was very close to, you know, he's very close to Ahmadinejad when he said it. And if you look at the New York Times' own translation, when they translated the speech, they translated it more or less correctly as the regime occupying Jerusalem will disappear from the pages of history. But it was a prediction. It wasn't a threat. It was in the context of him saying, "Our Ayatollah Khomeini, the father of the Islamic State, he predicted that the Soviet Union would be no more." And sure enough, he was right. He predicted that Saddam Hussein would fall, and sure enough, he was right. He predicted that the Shah would be overthrown, and sure enough, he was right. He has predicted that the regime occupying Jerusalem will disappear from the pages of time. He was a very wise man. This is what he said, and it was translated correctly by the New York Times, but then all the New York Times editorialists and everybody else in America kept saying, he threatened to wipe Israel off the map, and they just ran with it. It wasn't correct. But yeah, that was the mistranslation. Death saying at rallies and whatnot, chanting death to America, that probably happens.
Well, you figure, the government of the U.S. has interfered with the Iranian government since the 50s, since they installed the Shah, right?
Right.
And if I understand history, the Shah was brutal to the people. And then as soon as they overthrow that system in 79 and install the basically theocracy under the Ayatollah Khomeini, as soon as they do that, then there's a proxy war that the U.S. gets into. Between Iraq, Iran, and Russia, so, or I think,
well, Iraq, Iran, Russia, Russia wasn't directly involved in it.
Didn't they support Iran, I'm saying?
Russia had its own...
Look at it from the third.
The Soviet Union had its own stuff going on during the 1980s. So I don't know if I'd call them a proxy. To an extent, like the Israelis were... they were friendlier with Iran during that war. They were selling Iran weaponry. And when the Reagan administration... This is part of the Iran-Contra scandal. When the Reagan administration wanted to make contacts with the Iranian government, it went through Israel. Because this Israel had contacts. Israel was supplying Iran with like spare parts for its weaponry. Because under the Shah, Iran was getting weapons from the United States. Iraq had actually been... they were getting their weapons from the Soviet Union back in the day. So when, during the war, as the Iranian military, as they needed spare parts, they couldn't get it directly from America. They were getting their spare parts from Israel in order to, you know, repair their aircraft and whatnot.
Okay, well... So, I mean, I look at the Cold War from, like, I was kind of referring to it from a distance. Like, mm-hmm. It was always Russia versus the U.S. in some form or fashion, and there was usually some kind of proxy going on. I didn't know exactly how Russia was involved or if they even...
To
what extent they were.
I may be downplaying it, but there was an aspect of keeping the war going. If you're Israel, these are both countries that you don't like, and keeping the war going between them, a brutal war going for eight years, that's a good thing. There's no downside to having them fight.
Yeah, well, Russia at that time would have been bogged down in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And the U.S. would have been setting up Al-Qaeda, Operation Cyclone. So... There was that going on. The point I was trying to make is that the West did support Iraq. And where you had, if I read the history on that correctly, about 500,000 people died in that war. And so, the West's involvement with Iran has always been negative. You really can't blame the people for being angry at the West. And so let's take it at face value that all these things have been said. You know, what did the U.S. do after they invaded two countries that really had nothing to do with 9/11, you know, Toby Keith comes out with that song, Red, White, and Blue, Stick a Boot in Your Ass, and it's so...
Okay, there you go. That would probably sound very strange to somebody. Stick a Boot in Your Ass sounds pretty strange to the speakers of most languages.
Yeah, I mean, think of how do the mothers and fathers feel in Iraq and in... Afghanistan, who had children killed in that war, and they really don't know why. They really don't know the whole geopolitics of it, and, you know, the West is celebrating it. I mean, that's, you know, even going back into Iraq in the 90s, you know, is 500,000 deaths worth it? Well, I think it's worth it. Albright, yeah. So, you really can't blame the people for chanting death to America, death to Israel. I mean, there's always been something that the West has been involved in the Middle East, really for 100 years since the Ottoman Empire fell. But all of that having been said, if things go badly in this conflict with Iran, Israel is out there to be blamed, and maybe even the Jewish diaspora. So I got two interesting headlines here, one from the Forward, and the title of this from the Forward. This was from last week. If war with Iran goes badly for the U.S., Jews will be the scapegoat. This is from the Forward. Ron Eshman, senior columnist. So it says, if the United States attack on three cities in Iran truly puts an end to the Islamic Republic's nuclear weapons program with no serious or prolonged repercussion against American troops or civilians, then sign me up for the celebration. But in ordering the bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities, chances are President Donald Trump didn't end a war. He just entered one. And where it goes from here can have dire, unforeseen consequences for America, Israel, and American Jews. And he's going into, I'll read the whole thing. but he's basically going into how, you know, the push was maybe to let Trump be the face of this, but people on the left and on the far right are increasingly blaming not only Israel, but the Jewish diaspora. Oh, I didn't know if you got a chance to read that. I just sent it to you last minute.
Yeah, no, I didn't get a chance to read it. And of course, while the first people to be blamed for anything, the people that are easiest to blame are always the, you know, the white male patriarchy, white Christian males. The last people that you can ever blame for anything are the Jews, because they're always the real victims. Even people who are accused of anti-Semitism, you know, they will say, well, it's not really the Jews. It's the Hazarian mafia. It's not really. It's just these few globalists at the top. The Zionists. It's always something. They'll always. Even people who are peddling genuine anti-Semitic conspiracy theories still have this tendency to try to say, well, it's not really the Jews that are the real Jews. The real Jews are great people. It's just this certain subgroup or fake group. That's so common. So I'm just saying.
All right. Yeah. Well, it's what I've always said is the people who are doing this, the enemy of the West and of, you know, Christian white men, they call themselves Jews. So, I mean, we're just going by what they identify themselves as. I don't know that they can even trace back to Old Testament Israel, but whether they can or not, that's what they call themselves.
Yeah.
So we have to go with that.
Whether they can or not, that's what they call themselves, and that's how people know them. Those are the people that we're referring to, this group of people, whether their ancestry traces back or not. I think it does, but whether it traces back or not, these are the people that we've been talking about on our show. This is the people, when people talk about Jews in the 20th century or the 19th century or any kind of recent history or even not so recent history, it's these people. So,
well, and I think that the people in power, to the extent they trace back to the Bible, are mostly going to be like New Testament elites and religious leaders that intermixed in with the different countries, sort of a bastardization of Israel. And so, you know, that's why you have three different groups of Jews. You really didn't have that much diversity in Israel in the Bible. You know, today you have Sephardic, Mizraim, and Ashkenazi, and they all look a lot different. I mean, you know, take an Ashkenazi Jew and put him up next to a Sephardic, and you can see the distinct genetic differences. So, just an aside note, I think there is a remnant of Old Testament Israel that's been kept pure genetically that, you know, is hidden within the diaspora. But the people that are the movers and shakers, and the majority of them, are mixed in. And, you know, The only ties they have are people with names like Levin, you know, from the tribe of Levi. Or, you know, sometimes their last names can indicate what tribe they're from. Or Reuben, you know, you can see one of the tribes in some of these names. That was a little bit of an aside.
Hey,
I was just making the point that... Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Just really quickly, you know, Ron Unz, and I don't believe, like, just because Ron Unz says something, I don't automatically say, okay, that must be true.
But, and I'm alone. Skin, yet chill me to the bone.
Are you really prepared? There's one critical piece most people forget. When disaster strikes, the most powerful survival tool isn't in your hands, it's in your head. But here's the hard truth. Knowledge disappears fast when the grid goes down. That's why we created the Preparedness Tablet, the first and only off-grid digital library designed specifically for survival situations. We've done the work for you. This rugged, portable tablet comes preloaded with a massive library of practical knowledge, food preservation and storage, emergency medical care, off-grid living and homesteading, security, defense, and more. It's indexed, searchable, organized, and powered by a free solar charger, so you'll never be without it. It also comes with a protective hard case, and you could upgrade it with supplemental survival files and EMP protection. Whether it's a power outage, social unrest, or a full-blown crisis, this tablet gives you instant access to skills that save lives. From treating wounds to growing food, even saving cherished family documents and photos, this preparedness tablet is your silent partner when things go sideways. You can't know it all, but you can carry it with you. Preloaded with survival knowledge, runs 100% off-grid, backup and store your own files, lightweight, portable, and solar-powered. Join thousands of Americans closing the last gap in the emergency prep. Visit our website now and get peace of mind in the palm of your hand. The preparedness tablet also makes a thoughtful and potentially life-saving gift. Invest in yourself, protect your family. Visit www.comcoms.link. That's www.comcoms.link. Be ready, be smart, be the one who plans ahead. We also offer custom portable radios that come pre-configured for your local area. Included with these versatile radios is free basic training to get you up to speed quickly on how to use your radio. Visit our website today and learn all about our unique products. Comcoms.link. comcoms.link.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
Making a point there. Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Just really quickly, you know, Ron Unz, and I don't believe, like, just because Ron Unz says something, I don't automatically say, okay, that must be true. But if Ron Unz says something, I will almost automatically think, well, maybe it's worth looking into. But Ron Unz, his theory is that the Jews of today, certainly the Ashkenazi Jews, are descended from the Philistines, and that the descendants of the Hebrews of the Bible are the Palestinians. So I won't go into his logic because I don't remember it, but you can find, if you go to uns.com and you do a appropriate kind of search, you'll probably find a one-hour-long article. When I say one-hour-long, You can listen to his articles. He reads all his articles, or maybe he uses AI to read his articles in his voice. But yeah, you can catch that, and it's interesting. I guess it's plausible.
Well, to the extent that that's true, that then the Israelis of the Old Testament would have mixed with Arabic peoples, because the Palestinians are really tanned. I mean, they're darker, complected, have more like Arabic features. Descriptions of King David and King Solomon, David was white and ruddy and bright-eyed, and Solomon's skin was like alabaster, and he had dark curly hair. So I mean, they had some European type qualities even back then. I mean, they weren't brown, but really getting on some asides there that maybe we can revisit. Mm-hmm. I was making the point that the face of this administration is really white Christian, whereas you look at what Biden's administration, mm-hmm. look how many Jewish people was in his. So
right.
If things went bad with him, you know, people, the public still probably wouldn't blame the Jews if things go bad with Biden. They're blaming Biden, you know. But that, what do you call it, that paranoidness that the Jewish community has, you know, oh, no, we better, you know, we're going to go to war. Let's pick the most white Christian people we can pick. Or let's
pressure Trump into picking these people. So, and yeah, I think that once it was obvious that the Democrat Party was collapsing because of the Palestinian issue, once that became obvious, I think you had a lot of Adelsons and people like that that would not have supported Trump. Well, the Adelsons did, but maybe you have a lot of other people in Jewish power that pushed their support to Trump because they're like, okay, well, you know, we got October 7th, now it's time to, you know, support a war candidate. In their minds, they wanted a war candidate and the face of it to be white Christian. Kind of the point I'm making.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if it's valid or not.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Adelsons were putting their money behind Trump from pretty much the get-go, from 2016. Trump entered presidential politics in 2015, going down the escalator. Now, there were people...
Yeah. Adelson waited... Mm-hmm. Adelson waited till he won the Republican nominee, right?
Yeah, I think it was till it was clear he had won the 2016 primaries. Because Trump ran in the 2016 primaries self-funded. He wasn't soliciting contributions at the time. There were people who... Bill Ackerman and some others who had supported Trump in 2024 with big-time donations who were not supporters previously. So he did get some new Jewish support, and, you know, it may be something along the lines of what you were describing, this is a time to push for war with Iran, and this is the guy to do it, and... whereas, you know, and the administration, I mean, apparently Miriam Adelson was pushing hard for Rubio to be the vice president. And his name was like one of the, I guess, the three finalists. And I guess Rubio is, you know, he's been through the Florida kosher certification process. Florida is one of the three states that has the heaviest Jewish influence in it, the others being New York and California. But those three states have massive Jewish influence. It's hard to go far in those states if you're not kosher certified. Although what we're seeing in New York City actually, maybe you can. You got that, we don't have to talk about it on this show, but you got that guy who just, this 33-year-old Indian Muslim who just won the New York primary. But it kind of proves the point, because you've got the entire Jewish establishment in freak-out mode over it. Back to you, Jeremy.
Yeah, well, he was promising all these real liberal things and appealing to the left, but really, wasn't that like a referendum on Zionism in New York and this rabid support for Israel?
Yeah.
Him getting the Democratic nominee, I mean, that's kind of tells you where the left is at right now.
Right, so that was the Democratic primary. Now, New York's a heavily Democratic state. It doesn't have much of a Republican party. New York's a weird state in that it's kind of an easy state for third parties to operate in, because third parties...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, this is Mike Gatti, the rebel madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. at the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles, and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Go to RepublicBroadcasting.org. Smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
Cool it with anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Recover the damage. Bring it all home. Follow the blues just like a summer song. They stay there forever. I try to remember. Come home.
New York's a weird state in that it's kind of an easy state for third parties to operate in because third parties can, you can like cross, what is it? You can cross nominate people. So there's a liberal party in New York and there's a conservative party in New York, among other third parties. There's like a Working Families Party. There's the Rent's Too Damn High Party. At times, you have competitive races where you've got people from the conservatives or the liberals who are competing as separate candidates. In fact, the brother of William Buckley, whose name was James Buckley, back in, was it early 70s? He won a U.S. Senate seat. Not as a Republican, but as a conservative running against a Democrat and a Republican, and he won. That's a little bit of trivia for you. But, so it's interesting. And it was, to a large extent, it did come down to your position on Israel. Why should the race for mayor of New York come down to your position on Israel? It's not as if the mayor of New York is a foreign policy, he's not involved in foreign policy, but that's I think that it's the kosher certification aspect of local politics that I was talking about. If you're not kosher certified, then you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, and that's falling apart, at least in that New York race, for the left anyway, which fell apart in the areas that are represented by Rashid Tlaib and what's the other one? What's the other bald head?
The bald head is Ilhan Omar. Yeah.
Ilhan Omar. You know, I want to make a meme with Steven Steinwhite doing the Ron Paul pose, you know, and this cloud in the background, this mushroom cloud, and then, you know, behind Steinwhite, you're going to have those three, this mayoral candidate, Rashib and Omar, and then the meme will read, the caption will be at the bottom, "I tried to warn you," exclamation point. That would be a funny meme. I don't know if anybody would get it, because people don't know who Steinwhite is.
I don't even know what he looks like.
Yeah, I don't know if I can find a picture of him, but if I can, I'm going to make that meme and send it to you.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, so the face of things going badly is really, really not looking good for the Jewish establishment. Let's see, I had one on the Jerusalem Post. U.S. strike on Iran, Jerusalem Post. They look at the ripple effect on American Jewry, anti-Semitism, Israel ties. The U.S.'s unprecedented strike on Iran raises serious questions about rising anti-Semitism in the U.S., the precarious state of U.S.-Israel relations, and the security of American Jewish communities. And then there's a picture of the Democratic Women's Caucus. Cory Booker speaks at a House Democrats conference. So, Cory, the aftermath of the recent U.S. military strike on Iranian nuclear facilities authorized by President Donald Trump without congressional stretches beyond geopolitical implications. The strike raised very real concerns about rising anti-Semitism in the U.S. Jewish community organizations quickly rallied in the wake of the attack, sending out official statements. Tim Burke, CEO of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, stated, quote, "Israel is not seeking escalation. It's seeking survival. Israel is acting to defend its citizens from an existential threat that the world has too often chosen to ignore. No sovereign nation would tolerate what Israel has endured. The world shouldn't expect Israel to either." And we can go on and on with different Jews coming out and making statements saying, "It's not us. Look, we're just..." But you can always get what's really going on in their minds by reading their own publications.
Yeah.
And I think there's a sense of panic right now.
Yeah, and you said that it's from the Jerusalem Post?
Yeah, what I was reading from was the Jerusalem Post.
So, the Jerusalem Post has primarily a Jewish audience. And so you've got, like, the New York Times, which is run by Jews, and their editorial slant might not always be the same as the Jerusalem Post. The New York Times might be, you know, anti-Netanyahu, pro-Naftali Bennett, for instance. They might support a different person to be Prime Minister of Israel than the Jerusalem Post, which I think is pretty pro-Likud. But that having been said, so you have a press like the New York Times that is primarily goyim-facing, or goy-facing. The Jerusalem Times, or Jerusalem... The Jerusalem Post is Jewish-facing, and so it's partly, you know, Jews indoctrinating their own people, but also these publications by Jews for Jews. This is also part of the means by which the Jewish power structure reaches consensuses on issues. This is how, you know, I always go back. It's not as if there is just one central board, central Elders of Zion room where they get together and say, "This is what we're going to do." The Jewish agenda is set by a process of writing articles and hammering out positions and arguing with each other, and you get a consensus that's and a narrative that's created that way, you know. And so here, one of the narratives you see reflected in what you were just reading was, no country could tolerate these things. What Israel is doing is what any country would do in the same situation, which is bull honk, or maybe it's not bull honk, but but there's no other country in the same situation because no other country is trying to expand its borders and genocide its rivals. And if you're going to have that caveat, well, if you're trying to expand your borders, take over other countries and genocide everybody who gets in your way, yeah, no other country would tolerate this threat. But no other country has those objectives.
Yeah, so, no, I get what you're saying. From a consensus, so like the Jerusalem Post, maybe to the Jewish community, would be what Fox News is to the boomers. It kind of, you get narratives built, opinions formed, then, you know, the boomers go out and perpetuate that to other boomers with American flags on their F-250s or their Harleys. And before you know it, the entire Patriot Boomer community is saying the same things. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to understand Jewish power, by understanding boomer power.
Yeah, Fox News. You know, in the early Soviet Union, you had this principle of democratic centralism. And that might have been about as centralized as Jewish power ever got, was in the years following the so-called Russian Revolution. And you did, at that time, you actually did have something more or less akin to a Learned Elders of Zion centrality, except that there were non-Jews in it. You had a Politburo. The Politburo was the a subcommittee of the Central Committee. The Communist Party had a Central Committee that had many dozens or even a couple hundred of members. If the Communist Party had a Congress, you would have a few thousand people attending it. And then there's a Central Committee. And then the Central Committee, from the Central Committee, a dozen or so people were selected for the Politburo, the Politics Bureau. And that was like the Learned Elders of Zion, except that they were only about half Jewish and they're half Goy. But it was extremely centralized. It wasn't decentralized. It was very, very centralized. And while they would hash out things among these dozen people in the Politburo, once a position was settled on, then it was imposed top down through, you know, various organs. You know, you had state-run media, so you had Pravda. You had Izvestia, these were newspapers. You had the TASS news agency, and the position of the party was transmitted centrally to the people. That's what they set up. Now the thing is, over the course of a couple of decades, the Jewish elements of the Politburo were purged, and so you wound up throughout the Cold War with a Soviet government that had inherited this kind of Learned Elders of Zion centralism, and yet they were no longer Jewish themselves, and they had also inherited an economic system that was centralized, where you had the central planning of the economy, you had the state ownership of the means of production. They had inherited this, and they also, their legitimacy was all based on the Russian Revolution and scientific Marxism and all of this stuff. They were saddled with all of this. They were saddled with all of this Jewish bullhonk, and at the end, they didn't know how to rid themselves of it. And you know, Gorbachev wanted to move in a different direction, but by moving in a...
Okay, we had a little bit of a technical issue, but I was just finishing up saying how difficult it was for the Soviets that inherited a centralized Jewish system to transition to a more rational system, and they were unsuccessful in it, but... And I guess my overall point was that typically, like the Jewish system we have now is decentralized, but I was showing how there was an exception to this, a centralized system that was created by the Bolsheviks that really wasn't workable. The decentralized system works a lot better. But anyway, we lost the end of our discussion, but we're going to recreate it here. So I kick it back to you, Jeremy.
I mean, the decentralized system works very well in American Western politics. And you know, you had Fox News, which is basically where the Boomer MAGA gets their news from. And, you know, I would argue that Jews in power then would get their go-ahead from AIPAC and the AJC, American Jewish Council, you know, all of which have went against Thomas Massey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we can get into that more on your show, get into more of the American politics side of it. But these strikes on Iran were not really successful, and it seemed to me just like they were testing the waters, because I think I heard from a commentator that the U.S. dropped the equivalent of like 30% of the Hiroshima bomb, you know, as far as how they measure it in TNT power. Mm-hmm. And it didn't penetrate Iran's underground nuclear facility.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that it, and then when Iran struck back, you know, they pretty much let Qatar know they were striking Al Udeid, and it was kind of a demonstration of what they could do.
You know,
but as far as the nuclear power, No, I was wanting you to elaborate on, you know, how much 30% of that was.
Well, here's the thing. It's a lot. So the Hiroshima bomb, the final tally probably killed 100,000 or more people. And a lot of people were killed in the blast. A lot of people were killed pretty quickly because of probably gamma ray radiation sickness. And then other people died slowly over the years because of various forms of cancer. So it killed lots of people. It's easier to kill people than it is to destroy buildings. And it's easier to destroy buildings than to penetrate a mountain and destroy some bunker that's maybe a couple hundred feet below the surface. I've been to Hiroshima. And near the center of the blast, there's one, what they call the Peace Dome. And it's a building that was made out of concrete, and it had some sort of steel dome on it. And all that's left is just like a concrete shell and the skeleton of the dome. That was a pretty substantial building, and it's not all gone. So even this nuclear bomb, you know, albeit a primitive nuclear bomb, uranium bomb, it still didn't. It knocked down like the wooden buildings and everything, and created fires. But there was a concrete building with a iron dome, a steel dome on it, that parts of it are remaining. So on the one hand, that's a big blast, it killed huge numbers of people. But if you're talking about destroying something a couple hundred feet below the surface, and you know, the mountain and everything, and as you're saying, the explosive power was only 1/3 of the Hiroshima bomb. How confident can you be that you destroyed it? The idea, I think, was that they dropped it straight down a ventilation shaft. Well, that's fine if the ventilation shaft goes straight down, but these bunkers were built on the assumption that they would be bombed. That's why you build bunkers. And so the probability is high that the ventilation shafts don't go straight down, that they curve around, and so the bombs probably didn't penetrate. So is there anything that else I needed to add to that?
Like what percentage of, you're talking uranium, you're talking about what percentage of it could be hauled in a truck, a half-ton truck.
So what we've been hearing about is the Iranians had uranium enriched to 60%. And if you want to know all about enriching uranium, listen to my show that's about to be broadcast on RBN. But by the time you hear this, it will be my Tuesday show. You can go into the archive.
Hi, Sometimes when your hopes have all been shattered, there's no way to turn. You wonder how you keep going. Think of all the things that really matter and the chances you earn.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
And if you want to know all about enriching uranium, listen to my show that's about to be broadcast on RBN. But by the time you hear this, it will be my Tuesday show. You can go into the archives and look for the show. It's said the way you enrich uranium is not by sending in infinity third worlders to live with it. Okay, that's how you enrich white countries, but how you enrich uranium is like a totally different process. But I explained that in that show. How much enriched uranium did they have? Supposedly about 900 pounds. So 900 pounds. Can you move 900 pounds of enriched uranium? How do you move it? Well, it's in a container. The container, I don't think necessarily has to be that complicated. I'm not an expert on it, but basically, the uranium hexafluoride would be something akin to heavy dry ice, heavy toxic dry ice. And you can
Okay, so a lead container.
a lead container, even probably a steel container that's well sealed, and then how much is that going to weigh? You could probably put it in the back of a pickup truck. 900 pounds of uranium is going to be a lot smaller in volume than, say, 900 pounds of concrete. I used to move around up to 1,500 pounds of concrete rubble in my Dodge minivan, my Dodge Caravan, which I kind of abused to death. But at any rate, yeah, you could. It's not that big. If you had it all in one container, you could probably move it on the back of a pickup truck. If you split it into a few different containers, maybe you could put them in minivans or even a Toyota Prius. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way that I get pickup trucks to consecutively last 400,000 miles is I never haul or tow more than what it's rated. So I would put it in a half-ton pickup truck. Putting it in the Sonoma would be a bit of a stretch, but definitely a half-ton, you know, full-size pickup truck and all that. That's interesting. It's not a big amount.
No.
And so,
And that amount is enough for several Hiroshima-sized uranium bombs.
Oh, wow, that puts it even more perspective. So that's what Iran is enriched, you're saying?
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, they've proven, so you gotta have a delivery system, right, to get this material where it needs to go to explode. And I think that this whole Iran-U.S. strike, this back and forth, was a little bit of a test, putting the toe in the water or, you know, wetting your thumb and putting it in the wind, to not only see what each side is capable of, and Iran proved to be very capable. It had a few, you know, out of all the bombs it lobbed at Israel, a few got through, even with the Iron Dome. And of all of the, you know, bombs they lobbed at Qatar, and of course Qatar knew it was coming, a few got through. So they are capable of delivering this. So they've demonstrated that. And it was also a toe in the water to figure out, like, the political climate and how would people in America respond to this. And I think that's where we you know, we're probably going to end up leaving off and getting onto your show later, is the political response to this. And it didn't go well. It did not go well at all. No one in America, I mean, 70%, I've heard these numbers, are not in favor of war with Iran.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I think that's about all the time we have for today.
Well, let's pick this up on Patrick and Jeremy, too. 12 noon Central on the Bugle Wednesday on RBN. Stay classy. Patrick, stay classy, my friend.
Thanks.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.